Welcome to Music and Medicine with Dr. Carl Wern. On the first Sunday of each month at this time, Dr. Wern soothes you with classical music and great ideas for living a more healthful life. Now, here is Music and Medicine with Dr. Wern.
Welcome to the month of September, and the focus this month is on going back to school, because September is a time when the doors open at the local school and kids are supposed to be starting to do their homework. Going to school has always been exciting for me from the very beginning, because I went to a wonderful nursery school growing up, and the people who ran the nursery school also had a wonderful summer camp called Lilliput Gulliver that focused on not just sports and campfires, but on the arts. I remember during my ninth year of life, I performed in a production of Huckleberry Finn, and I had to convince Tom Sawyer to paint the fence that I was painting, and I still remember the ease in which I delivered those lines to convince Tom Sawyer to do my dirty work. But to get to the point of school, after that I went to the United Nations International School for 6 years and met all kinds of interesting people from all over the world. And I learned how important it was to have teachers who were able to kindle your imagination, make you interested in exploring the knowledge of the world. It's not an accident that I've become a doctor in many ways, though both my parents were doctors, so that helped influence the course of my life. But the doctor really is considered a teacher. The Latin word docere is the origin of the word doctor. And then in English, it means not only teacher, but to hold the highest degree. When you're a doctor, you hold the highest degree. And I think that the exploration of knowledge has been a fundamental quest in my life. I learned that to a large part from my teachers, particularly my musical teachers and my teachers in medical school. I think that the best way to get the program started is to talk about my first cello teacher, who was a great inspiration to me. I was his only student at the time when he was a freelance cellist in New York, and David Sawyer was his name. The funniest thing is that his father was a relatively famous painter, Moses Sawyer, and unbeknownst to me was that my mother had modeled for Moses Sawyer, Raphael Sawyer, and a variety of other paintings at the Art Student League. And actually, I have a painting by Moses Sawyer that was in my living room even before I started studying with David, who was his son. But David Sawyer was a very unusual man who was not only a master cellist, but he was a promoter of music in general. He was a very significant part of the Marlboro Festival. He formed the Guarneri Quartet in 1964-65. It became the leading string quartet in the world. I have a recording that he did with Arthur Rubinstein in 1966, where Rubinstein, who was already in his late 70s, wanted to record the Schumann, the Dvorak, and the Brahms quintets for piano and string quartet, and also the Brahms piano quartets. They both had contracts with RCA over a period of about a month in New York City. Rubinstein and the Guarneri recorded these works. And I'm going to play you a very significant work, the Dvorak Piano Quintet, because my mother started playing that when I was one or two. And the reason I play the cello is because it opens up with a magnificent cello solo that is accompanied by the piano. That recording with the Chigi Quartet and a famous pianist, a 1950 recording, is still very much in my mind. One of the great recordings, I think, in the 20th century. Unfortunately, we don't have that recording, but I'll give you a very good one, the Rubinstein and the Guarneri Quartet, and the cellist playing the solo in the opening of the piece is David Sawyer. I would like to just point out one other thing about Arthur Rubinstein, one of the greatest pianists in the history of the world, along with Horowitz, is that he was an incredible man who had a photographic memory, who wrote books where he could detail every page of his life, and he enjoyed everything about life, maybe a little bit too much. In Wikipedia, they talk about him that he was accused in his youth of being too much involved in wine, women, and song, and he said to the person who said that, "You're completely wrong. 95% of my time was spent with women." There's a great story I have about Rubinstein. I wasn't there at the recording sessions, but I used to see David periodically and take lessons, and I would stay for dinner at his house, and he said a great story about Rubinstein. He came to one of the rehearsals. It was a month long, and he said to everybody, he says, you know, I have this terrible problem the last 24 hours. I have this terrible pain in my tooth. I think I have an infected tooth. He says, but you know what? He says, I am really having a wonderful time experiencing this. And I think this just says to the point, this man basically experienced everything in life. He experienced everything in life to a degree that almost is superhuman. Now we will hear this wonderful first movement of the Dvorak Piano Quintet, Opus 81 in A major, Allegro ma non tanto, which means fast but not so fast. Thank you. The Dvorak Piano Quintet is one of the great masterpieces of Dvorak, and by the way, another great masterpiece is the Dvorak Cello Concerto, which practiced but never performed, but we will talk about later in the program. The next teacher that I had that made a big impression on me was a distant cousin of Yasha Heifetz, was Benner Heifetz, who was a Russian Jew, had to flee Russia. He was born in 1903, and he had to flee Russia because of the Bolshevik Revolution. He had studied in Germany a little bit, but he had been in Russia till he was about 16, 17. He promptly fled Russia, studied with major teachers in Germany, and then formed a quartet called the Kolish Quartet in the 1920s that performed from memory. And he used to tell me that they used to rehearse with their chairs back to back when they weren't looking at each other, but they had memorized all the music, which is quite incredible. And they're also known because they were the quartet that introduced all of Arnold Schoenberg's quartets. Another remarkable thing about this Benner Heifetz was that when he escaped Russia, they were shooting at him, and they didn't hit him, but they hit his cello. So he had a cello with a few holes in it, and he was really recognized as one of the great chamber musicians of the 20th century. After he fled Germany due to the Nazis, he became principal cellist in the Philadelphia Orchestra, and then he had a major chamber music career with the Albinary Trio, and he taught at Manhattan School of Music and the major music schools in the United States. Another very interesting thing about Benner is that before he joined Philadelphia Orchestra, he played in the Cleveland Orchestra for a little bit. And he was, I think, the associate principal cellist there. At one of the last rehearsals of the Cleveland Orchestra, George Sell was conducting, and he came to the last rehearsal, and Benner was not there. And he went home, and Olga, his wife, was not there. It was a very sort of bittersweet story that Benner ran off with Olga. And I met Olga, who was a very fine pianist, and she grew up in Vienna, and actually Schoenberg was one of her teachers, and she taught at the Manhattan School of Music, very elegant lady. She was a big assistant to Benner for the last 25 years of his life. Another great story about Benner that another musician told me was that, who was a Russian, who said when Benner left Russia, there was a lot of people were disappointed because they said, "Benner, it's all right that you left Russia, but you should have left your spiccato," which is a very fancy bowing technique behind. The last thing I'll say about Benner is that when I used to go to my lessons on Sunday, I had to interrupt him at times because he was addicted to the Oakland Raiders football team. I had to pull him away from the football game to start giving me a lesson. I became interested in the Oakland Raiders at that point, too. But now we will play a piece that I studied with him, a Mozart violin sonata that I studied with him very carefully in the early 1970s, and I recorded it in 2003, and we'll perform the first movement of the Mozart sonata in E minor for violin that's been transcribed for cello and piano. Robert Koppelson is the pianist. Thank you. The next person I will introduce as my teacher, I never took any formal lessons with him. I met him maybe 30 times, and I went to about 80 of his concerts, the great cellist Mstislav Rostropovich, who was probably the most famous cellist of the 20th century. And I went to his first concert in Carnegie Hall, I remember very well. I had to get there in a snowstorm, and the buses weren't working in Queens. And I get to the Carnegie Hall, and he gives one of the most amazing concerts. This is the late 1950s I've ever heard in my life. Not only went to a lot of his concerts, I went backstage and got to know him a little bit, because when he played the Dvorak Cello Concerto with the Rochester Philharmonic, I was in medical school. My wife was playing in the orchestra as a extra, and I went backstage to say hello to him, and he says, "Ah, doctor, the doctor from New York." So he got to know me pretty well, and then he came up to Hartford to teach at Hart School of Music, and I went to a concert there, and I actually ate dessert with him. Fabulous genius, not only a great cellist, but he inspired a lot of composers that wrote over 100 pieces that he commissioned or inspired. He did things like take the London Symphony to New York City, and over 2.5 weeks, he played every single cello concerto known to man. And he played this John Cage piece, and he did everything from memory, because it had the opening of the John Cage piece, had a phonographic recording of the first movement of the Bach Fifth Cello Suite. Turns out that it was such a complicated piece that Rostropovich told me that he had to stay up to 3 o'clock in the morning to make sure he had it memorized. And very interesting about his training, his father was a fine cellist. His uncle was a cellist who he studied with when he was in Moscow. But very interesting enough, his father studied with the famous cellist Pablo Casals in the 1920s. So he has a huge pedigree, and he became one of the grand masters of the cello in the history of music. And of course, Shostakovich, who is a very good friend of Shostakovich, and Shostakovich wrote his cello concertos for him, as well as his cello sonata. And we're going to play that Bach Fifth Suite, the opening movement that he played in this John Cage concerto, but I don't have a recording of Rostropovich doing it, but I have a recording of Dr. Carl doing it. So we'll open up with the first movement of the Bach Fifth Suite in C minor. I'm going to give you a special recording I have of Rostropovich playing. I heard him play this piece at least a half a dozen times. It's the famous Variations on a Rococo Theme by Tchaikovsky, and there's nobody who plays it better. And I'm going to play the wonderful, wonderful second-to-last movement of this Rococo Variations that Tchaikovsky wrote for this fabulous German cellist that Tchaikovsky wrote for Fitzenhagen, who was the first cellist of the Imperial Orchestra of the Tsar. And it was written in the 1880s, and it's an incredibly difficult piece, but it has some of the great soulful writing of Tchaikovsky. And I'm going to play the second to last movement of this great piece for cello and orchestra, Tchaikovsky Variations on a Rococo Theme.
Thank you.
I am about to introduce you to a very dear friend, Tasso Katsalas, who is a young man at the age of 95. He was also born on Bastille Day, so he has a special place in my heart. Here he is now. He's Greek, a unique Greek gentleman with a unique Greek family that came over from Greece in the turn of the 20th century. I think he is great in what he can do to help us describe the importance of being Greek and how the Greek laid the foundation for Western civilization.
Well, Carl, thanks for the opportunity. As a young man, I was always fascinated by the story of Alexander the Great being educated by Aristotle. But soon I realized that this was just a blip in the history of Greece, and it just didn't happen. And I began to wonder, how did it become that education, that poetry, that music and theater all became very important? The world back then was made up of cultures that survived with fear and death. And suddenly a bright light appeared where there was such a thing as freedom of thought, where a harmony of born of the mind, heart, and soul gave birth to an intellectual capacity matched by aesthetic virtuosity, where music was bound to poetry and theater. The other thing that came to mind was the education was not one that was passive. It was one that had people asking questions. The philosophical question was to unravel the secrets of being, the potential of mind and heart, where a harmony of freedom and spirit could thrive. I wonder today, and look at the Greek music that's being produced. The Greek musicians that do the serious music in Greece is still tied to the same culture where poets write the lyrics. And perhaps one day Dr. Wern might play and research the contemporary music that Greece offers. They continue to think and to offer the most important message, which is freedom and truth, two virtues that seem diluted today. And perhaps this program can stimulate something that makes us think about who we are, why we are, and why we hum someday. We hum, we sing, we dream, we think, and think about this little country in the middle of the world that started it all up.
Tasso, that was incredible. That was poetry and music in motion. I thank you very much, and I hope the check is in the mail. And this has been a wonderful moment for me. Give my love to Myrna. Now we'll get to some of the medical aspects of the program. The great thing about Rostropovich is not only was he one of the greatest cellists in the history of the world, but he was also a great fighter for personal freedom. And when he was a student in 1948, he left school because Stalin was discriminating against Shostakovich. And then in the 60s, he was a very good friend of Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the famous writer who won the Nobel Prize for the fabulous description of the penal colony of Soviet Russia, one day in the life of even Ivan Denisovich. And actually, Rostropovich helped him get out of the Soviet Union. And then Rostropovich was criticized, and he was banned from traveling abroad. And his career was severely curtailed for a few years. And then he came to the United States in 1974. And fortunately, he was able defect from the Soviet Union. And the most interesting thing about this is that not only did I know Rostropovich a little bit, I know very well the person who helped him defect. Because this is a great story. When I was living in Connecticut, I used to play chamber music at the home of a fabulous lawyer, Misha Kaskov, who is also of Russian origin. And he used to have these chamber music parties. But one of the people who lived in Connecticut, on the lake that I eventually bought a house on, was Nikki Sikorsky, who was the third son of Igor Sikorsky, who was the great Russian engineer, inventor of planes, and invented the helicopter, the first helicopter that was mass-produced, the R-4, in 1942, was his product. He told me the story how he helped Rostropovich escape. And Rostropovich came to visit him with three KGB agents. Rostropovich went into the house with the KGB agents, and then went down the lawn about 10 houses down, got into a car and disappeared. Now we'll get to the medical part, which is Rostropovich was allergic to despotism. So we're going to use that phrase allergy to talk about the medical aspects of September. I didn't know this until I went into a very fine dinner at Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Manhattan, where I had one of the premier allergists in the world talking about allergic reactions. He was a full professor at one of the big medical schools. And it's amazing how over wine and a wonderful filet mignon, you can absorb information incredibly fast and remember it for all time. And allergy is a very unique issue and problem in the world we have today, because especially in certain developed countries, because people develop more allergies because we're exposed to a lot more different medicines, foods. One of the underlying problems is we're too clean. And they find out that people have allergies in small families where the mother is obsessive about keeping things clean. And people in families where there are 5, 6, 7 children do not develop allergies as much. And this is called the theory of hygiene. Too much hygiene is bad for you. And it's good to have a dog and a cat around, because that means often you won't develop allergies. Allergies are a disease that it took a long time to figure out. And it was first sort of recognized in Roman history that Claudius Augustus Britannicus apparently had some allergic problems. And that was commented on by Latin scholars and writers. But the real understanding of allergy really took place much later. And the word allergy comes from a Viennese pediatrician who realized that people getting horse serum or smallpox would often develop reactions. The word allergy comes from the Latin other work. Something else happens. It's a word that was really coined for the first time in 1906 by this Perque is his name. And it took us a long time to understand allergies, because we all knew about immunoglobulins, the IgG, IgM, IgA, that are different immunoglobulins that we were able to quantify. But it wasn't until 1969 when a Japanese researcher and a Swedish researcher found out about IgE, because it's in such small amounts. When I went to medical school, we had just discovered the cause for allergies, the major allergic reaction that we talk about, which is itchy eyes or anaphylaxis. There are four types of allergic reactions that the human body, but they deal with often with immunoglobulins in clumps or IgA or IgM or hypersensitivity. But the major allergic reactions that we think of caused by IgA are considered the number one allergic type of reaction. And it's the IgE that gets along with the offending agent, whether it's the ragweed or the pollen or the penicillin or whatever. And it's that combination, when the IgE gets together with the antigen, actually it's two IgE molecules getting onto one antigen, it stimulates the inflammatory response in the basophils and the mast cells, and all hell breaks loose. And you get everything from wheezing, nausea, vomiting, to a cardiac arrest. Seasonal allergies, that they're mostly highest in September. We have some allergies, the tree pollen in March and April. We have grass pollen in June and July. But it's the ragweed and the mold in the fall, in early September and early and later in early October, that causes us to have the worst seasonal allergies. And we all know that we can get tested for that with patch testing and skin tests. And now we have some very good laboratory blood tests we can do. There's three different types of the RAS test, ELISA test, and a few others. So we can define the offending agent probably about 50% of the time. A lot of the time, we can never find out the cause for allergic reactions. I'm going to talk about not one of my teachers, but one of the conductors who had a very powerful influence on me, who was a famous conductor who had to flee Nazi Germany. He was Jewish. He was from Czechoslovakia. When they were invaded by the Nazis, he had to leave. He fled to London, and in London he studied with George Sell, the famous conductor of the Cleveland Orchestra, later on. But his name is Walter Suskin, and he was a brilliant conductor, pianist, and main conductor of Toronto, St. Louis, and a number of other orchestras. Now we will hear the fabulous overture to the La Forza del Destino with Force of Destiny that Verdi composed in the 1860s and was premiered at La Scala in 1869.
Thank you.
We began the program with a tribute to my first cello teacher, David Sawyer. Had him playing the opening phrase of the wonderful Dvorak piano quintet. We were going to end the program with an album that I put together dedicated to David Sawyer when he died in 2010. On this album, I have the three Bach Gamba sonatas that I recorded, but also the last piece on the recording is a slow movement from a Handel violin sonata, a beautiful sonata in G minor, and it's very interesting that I put this at the end of the recording that's dedicated to David, because I learned many years later, just a few years ago, that this was the last piece that Handel ever wrote. And he died a few weeks after he composed this violin sonata. So it's very appropriate that this be the last piece on the program to commemorate the life of a great cellist, David Sawyer. Now we will listen to the Largo, G minor, by George Frideric Handel, the first movement of this violin sonata, the last piece that George Frideric Handel ever wrote. Now, as we always do, we end the program with a popular song, and my producer had a wonderful song by the Beach Boys about going back to school, but I found in a Goodwill shop in Hancock, Maryland, a wonderful album collection of the complete recordings of Johnny Cash. This is the Sun recordings that he did in 1955 to 1958, before he became world famous. And there's a great recording about school. And I can sympathize with the lyrics of this piece, because in the 10th grade, I was overwhelmed by a beautiful Jewish girl named Naomi, and I could not concentrate on my social studies for that 6 months. Here is a wonderful recording that was, I think, recorded in 1958, a rendition by Johnny Cash of that great song, Straight A's in Love.
Well, the reading and the writing and arithmetic never did get through to me. It ain't because I'm square or thick, 'cause I learned my ABCs. But when I graduated from the grammar school and I moved one grade above, I began to be a snook at books, but I made straight A's in love. Now the teacher would say to learn your algebra, but I'd bring home C's and D's. How could I make an A when there's a swinging maid on the left and on the right and in the back and the front of me? Oh, my grades are low, oh, my card I know, but they ought to give me one above. If they'd give me a mark for learning in the dark, I'd have straight A's in love. Now in my senior year, with graduation year, I did my homework every night. And when my mama said I ought to go to bed, I turned out all the lights. But my sweetie pie was waiting right outside. She'd be a-cooing like a dove. Though I did my best, I failed semester tests, but I made straight A's in love. Now the teacher would say to learn your algebra, but I'd bring home C's and D's. How could I make an A when there's a swinging maid on the left and on the right and in the back and the front of me? Oh, my grades are low, oh, my card I know, but they ought to give me one above. If they'd give me a mark for learning in the dark, I'd have straight A's in love.
I'd like to end this program and tell you that I want to give my thanks for a wonderful man who's been very helpful in promoting my program. His name is Elliot Kirsten, and he is a good friend of my producer and a very, very well-known advertising guru. And he's known nationally. He's worked with hundreds of regional and national clients, including a former president of the United States. And he's put together a wonderful card promoting my show, and I want to thank Elliot Kirsten not only for the card, but for the reams of encouragement and getting me excited about my show as well as my audience. The good work done by friends is one of the most important part of survival in this current world. I'm looking forward to October, because October is Oktoberfest, and that's when we dance and we drink, dance, song, and we will play music that'll make you want to enjoy life even more. We will see you next time on Music and Medicine.
You have been listening to Music and Medicine with Dr. Carl Wern. Join us again at 5 p.m. on the first Sunday of every month right here on WRAX 106.5 FM. If you would like to hear the program again, visit bedfordcountyradio.com, Facebook, or find it on your favorite podcast, including Spotify, Google, Amazon, or Apple. See you next time on Music and Medicine.